Translation, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Thus instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yogamaya immediately agreed. With the Vedic mantra Om, she confirmed that she would do what he asked. Thus, having accepted the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she circumambulated him and started for the place on earth known as Nandagokul. There she did everything just as she had been told. So I'll read that again. It's a very powerful translation. So Yogamaya is being ordered, and now she accepts the order. Thus, instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yogamaya immediately agreed. With the Vedic mantra Om, she confirmed that she would do what he had asked. Thus, having accepted the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she circumambulated him and started for the place on earth known as Nandagokul. There she did everything just as she had been told. Purport. After receiving the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yogamaya twice confirmed her acceptance by saying, "Yes, sir, I shall do as you order," and then saying, "Om." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that Om signifies Vedic confirmation. Thus, Yogamaya very faithfully received the Lord's order as a Vedic injunction. It is a fact that whatever is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a Vedic injunction, and that no one should neglect it. In Vedic injunctions, there are no mistakes, illusions, cheatings, or imperfections. Unless one understands the authority of the Vedic version, there is no purpose in quoting Shastra. No one should violate the Vedic injunctions. Rather, one should strictly execute the orders of the Vedas, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 16:24, Tasmat chastram pramananam te karya karya vavastito gyatva shastra vidanotyam karma kartum iharhasi. Translation, one should understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that one may gradually be elevated. Om Gyan Timidandasya Gina Jana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapditam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadanti Swam Padanti Kam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Krishna has a plan when he needs his energies to assist him. Of course he doesn't, but he engages his energies accordingly. Parasya Shakti Virahaya Suyate Swabhavika Gyabala Kriyacha. That means all the energies are automatically working under the control of the Lord, and by His will, everything is being carried out. So He is the force behind the energy. But the energies are also personal. As we see here, Yogamaya, she's not only a person, but she's a very significant person in the Lord's energies. She assists Him in His pastimes. And she makes many arrangements according to his desires. And she also makes arrangements in such a way that even without the Lord's indication, she knows exactly how to make the arrangements. She's so perfect. She's Purnamasi in the spiritual world, where she makes all the arrangements for Krishna's leelas to happen in such a wonderful way. That there is so much variety and transcendental, what we say, excitement. And she enhances the qualities, not the quality, but she enhances the variety and the taste of the exchange between Krishna and his parts and parcels in the spiritual world to bring it to higher and sweeter levels. So she's a very, what we say, intricate part of Krishna's internal energy. And now she has a big problem. Not problem, she has a big service, you might say. It appears to be a problem, as is indicated in the previous verses. What is that problem? She has to do something that's really beyond her level of capacity. She has to move Balaram from one place to another. Balaram's the Supreme Lord. She has to take Balaram from the womb of Devaki and bring him to the room of Rohini in Vrindavan Dham, where Rohini is staying, along with, you know, Mother Yasoda. So this is her task. And Prabhupada makes that point. It's not an easy thing, even for her who's empowered. But the Lord has given her assurance that if she makes the effort by his arrangement, everything will be successful. And so she's off to do her duty. But here, there's some very significant points that precede her leaving for her service. And one of those points is that she is confirming that what she has been instructed will be carried out. And she does it twice. She says, yes, sir, or yes, Krishna. Krishna Prabhupada uses the word yes, sir, in the purport. Sometimes that's a general formality term referring to someone and can be applied to senior personalities or people in general. And Prabhupada says that. And she also says Om. Om means that it is the Vedic injunction and the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Om Tat Sat, sometimes we say. You've heard that mentioned. That if one wants to perform an activity that is a devotional activity, one can confirm that activity by the statement Om Tat Sat. In other words, Om, it is your order, Tat. It'll be done for your pleasure, and ultimately it is transcendental. In other words, the results will not be temporary. This is interesting to understand. If one does not act according to the Vedic injunction, or we might say the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the results may come, but they are not what we say transcendental results. They are temporary results, and then in due course of time, the results no longer. But anything that's done for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and for the pleasure of the Lord, according to his instructions coming through Shastra and, of course, through the spiritual master, then that is what we say a Vedic injunction. It cannot be neglected and is successful in all respects. So, Yogamaya, she's going on her way to do her service. And Prabhupada makes this point throughout the purport. Then there's no benefit in quoting Shastra unless one understands what is the purpose of Shastra. There's no benefit in using Shastra. Sometimes people use Shastra in order to fulfill their own needs or desires. And sometimes we hear that people take points from Shastras in order to push on a particular political or social idea. And this is very much common in India. You see, Prabhupada would say this quite often, how political leaders, they use Bhagavad Gita in order as a campaign way to bring people to their, you know, side. You know, I'm such a proponent of Bhagavad Gita, I'm so Vedic, so therefore you should vote for me. In other words, it looks good externally, or appears, but you know, it is not being done as a service to the Lord or for the service of the, what we say, the benefit of others. It's simply selfish. Therefore, quoting Shastras in that way has no value. But here, Prabhupada also makes another point, and he uses the verse from the Bhagavad Gita, 16:24, that one should know what is one's duty and what is not one's duty. In the Shastras, it mentions there's two principles, and these are mentioned by Sanatan Goswami in his Hari Bhakti Vilas. And these two principles are the first two principles that are the basis of surrender. And what is that? To accept things that are favorable for the execution of one's devotional service, and to be very aware of and careful not to perform activities that are unfavorable. Mm-hmm. And we see a lot of statements about what not to do. Because unless we know what not to do, or what to avoid, the benefits we get from doing the right thing will be mitigated by those activities. And there is yama and niyama. Yama means things and principles to accept. Niyama means principles to reject. Or sometimes we say vidis and prashedas. That means things to do and junctions of the Vedas to follow, and those junctions which are not applicable in a particular. So therefore, when sometimes people say, well, I can just read the scriptures and become Krishna conscious. Well, without the direction of one who knows the scriptures and who has applied the scriptures and can instruct the scriptures according to individual time, place, and candidate, one may simply read the scriptures and just pick what they choose what they like accordingly. Or even if they are sincere, they will make a mistake unless they understand how it applies to the direction that they're going. In other words, the benefit of their devotional service. Like one injunction says, one must eat prasadam. And what is the opposite? One should avoid those foods that are not offered to the Lord. So if one is saying, well, I'll eat prasadam, but I'll also eat other things, then one will minimize the results of their activities. In other words, one will break the Vedic injunctions. So this is a very, what we say, fundamental point in the execution of one's devotional service, to know carefully the difference between what to accept and what to reject, like that. And through that process, one can start to understand how devotional service is all auspicious. Because it is always auspicious if one carefully follows the principles like that. It's just like it says, one should pay one's obeisances. And in paying obeisances, it says one should touch, you know, 5 points of the body onto the floor. But if one pays obeisances with one arm instead of two, then that is not obeisances, and one will not get the benefit of that. In fact, that is considered to be an offense according to Nectar of Devotion. So these details, sometimes people ask, well, why all these little details? I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I'm a nice devotee. I don't really offend anybody. I'm kind to everybody. I give charity. I read the scriptures. But if we don't know these other points, little points of etiquette, which not only enhance, but also allow one to develop the proper mood of bhakti in execution of the principles, then one will minimize the effects of their activities like that. So, therefore, Prabhupada very carefully gave us Nectar of Devotion and very carefully explained all the different principles in various types of lectures over the years. In fact, there was one time he gave, for 1 month, he lectured on Nectar of Devotion every day. I think it was in November 1975 in Vrindavan. And again, at another time, to help devotees understand what are the principles that one must follow and what are the principles that one must, you know, avoid like that. So here, it's important to understand this point. And therefore, although things are in the scriptures, they may not apply. They may not apply to a particular circumstance or a particular individual. Just like one of the Nectar of Instructions, it mentions that there are six things that are favorable for one's execution of devotional service, and there are six things which are considered to be unfavorable. Now, within the category of those that are favorable, there's one called sadhu-vritti. Now, sadhu-vritti means following in the footsteps of the acharyas. In other words, applying the injunctions according to the instructions. But then again, there's two types of injunctions. One are for grihasthas and one is for the other ashrams. So there's a unique set of principles that apply for the grihastha ashram, and that is those that apply for brahmacharya and or maybe sannyas, like that. So if one says, well, it's an injunction, but it doesn't apply to your ashram, you get no benefit. So that's a breach of sadhu-vritti, which is a favorable activity in devotional service. Let me think of an example. Well, I can think of another type of example. Just like attachment to one's activities in devotional service, although they may be paraphernalia of devotional service, is another form of what we say pratikul, or those things which are unfavorable. For example, living in the home with wife, family, husband, children, like that, and having so many possessions. Well, that's bona fide if one is following the principles of grihastha ashram. But if one gets attached to these things for one's own enjoyment, then one no longer is actually executing the proper mood of a grihastha, and one cannot actually get the benefit. In other words, I'm attached to the enjoyment I get and not to the service that these things provide. So this is a more of a subtle principle, but we can see how what is favorable and what is unfavorable. So here, Yogamaya, she's saying, Om. Om, that means it's your will, and therefore I will carry it out. It is good as the Vedas itself. You are none different than the Vedas. The purpose of the Vedas, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, is to know you, and the compiler of the Veda is you. So Vedic injunctions and the goal of the Vedas, the compiler of the Vedas, the knower of the Vedas, the purpose of the Vedas is the person who actually gave everything, Krishna. So Vedic injunction and Krishna are non-different in that sense, and this is being illustrated here. And therefore she will carry out her duty, although it is difficult. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita, it's important that if one's duty appears to be very difficult to perform, but one accepts a lesser principle in order to perform an activity, that is, it's better to perform your own duty imperfectly than to take another's duty and do it perfectly. Like, in other words. In other words, well, I've been given this service, but I'll do this service because I like this service. It's easier. I can do this service. Although the instruction is perform this service. Here, Yogamaya could have said, well, you know, this, you're asking me to do practically the impossible, Krishna. Balaram, he's my superior in all respects. And you want me to move him from one womb to another by my energy. I can't do that. She was thinking like that. And when Krishna says, no, as soon as you accept the fact that it's my injunction and you're willing to carry it out, then the empowerment that comes for the successful execution automatically comes with the service. So this is an important point to understand. that for a devotee, nothing is difficult if they accept the order on their head and are willing to depend on the mercy of the Lord for the execution of the service. I mean, for some, like book distribution is very difficult. But sometimes we see devotees go out because, okay, everyone's going out, I should also go out. I'm very shy. I don't have that tendency to talk to people. In fact, I don't like to be with the karmis. And somehow I do it anyway because it's the instructions of this, my spiritual master, the representatives of my spiritual master. And then so many wonderful things happen. All of a sudden, you know, the person does good. Why? Because it is not them. It is simply their strong desire to fulfill the desire of the spiritual master and their efforts to apply the principles that make that service what we say. They do it in the best possible way. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. So in devotional service, with the order comes the empowerment. Well, you see how people generally approach a particular activity. And that is generally, we see people try to understand the activity and what I need to do to carry it out. And then they measure their own abilities and what is the nature of what do I have to do, and then they either choose to do it or not do it based on what we say empirical, logical understanding of the situation, maybe even gathering information. But a devotee knows, I can't do it, but Krishna can. And if I depend on Krishna and pray to Krishna, then what is it? Mukhaṁ karoti vācālaṁ pangu langate giri yakripaktanaham vande sigurundi natarinum. That the most difficult things become not only easy, but routine by the mercy of the spiritual master. How is this movement spreading around the world so fast? We see every year, you know, the movement is growing more and more and more. There's more devotees, more books going out, more temples are being opened, more books are being published, more prasadam is being distributed. Our movement is expanding. It's amazing. How is that? One might say, well, you know, there's some expertise there. Yes, but the expertise is actually based on the devotion. When the devotion is there, the expertise adds to the success of the activity. But without the devotion, and the devotion means it's a surrender to the principle of the order, and by doing that, with the desire, as Yogamaya here, she not only wants to do it, but she wants to please the Lord by her activities. So that makes the element nice. Just like if you have a nice piece of cake, but it has no whipped cream on the top and no cherries, there's no decoration, it's just cake. It might have a little taste to it. But if you add all these other, what we say, decorations on it, it's even sweeter and it's even more, what we say, desirable. So like that, when the execution is done with the desire to please and depending on the mercy of the spiritual master and Krishna in the execution of the activity, then that is success. And that is a success. There was one devotee, she was cooking for Srila Prabhupada. And she really wanted to make Prabhupada nice chapatis. This was in New Vrindavan, which things were quite basic there. We didn't have so many, how we say, facilities to do anything. Nothing, practically. And so there was didn't have the standard chapati grill for making chapatis. She just had this little bar with some, you know, little square bar. She had to put the chapati on that top of that, and therefore most of the time the chapati burnt. And then she was making chapatis, but she really wanted to please Prabhupada. And so one came and it was burnt. Prabhupada ate it. And then another one, it was burnt. Prabhupada ate that. And he was eating her chapatis because it was her devotion that he was tasting. Although it wasn't the best. And if somebody else might say, well, why do you give Prabhupada stuff like that? Which would be a normal, logical reaction to something like that. But Prabhupada saw it different. She wanted to please him so bad. She wanted to make chapatis for Prabhupada. But somehow or other, it wasn't coming out. So Prabhupada was tasting her devotion like that. Like that. So that's what makes the activity, what we say, acceptable. Even if it's difficult, if one wants to do it to please the Supreme Personality of God and to please Krishna, then that is perfection like that. And then the empowerment comes. Then the empowerment comes like that. So, and of course, back to this principle here, one should know what is duty and what is not duty like that. This is a very important thing to understand in our execution of devotional service. What I should do and what I should avoid like that. And that means hearing from the spiritual master regularly, coming to the classes, and reading the books. I mean, there's a lot of very, what we say, subtle points in the books. Just like, I'll give you an example. Not even in the books, but sometimes you find them only in Prabhupada's lectures. We were in New Vrindavan many years ago, and there was a little change in the way things were being done. So there was some adaptation of other religious traditions in the way we executed the activity. Basically, we were adopting Christian ways of doing things. After doing interfaith for a while, the community started to move towards Christianity in the way. So, and part of that, the devotees were chanting in the morning in a very dark temple room with little votive candles surrounding the area, and that was the only light. And sitting in chairs. And so we were thinking, well, you know, dark, you don't look around, so you can concentrate. But people were falling asleep. And most of the devotees were sleeping instead of chanting. So this went on for some time. And then later on, I found this one statement by Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, you know, you should not chant in the dark, and you should not, what was it? It was something else he mentioned. He said, you'll simply go to sleep. That's what he said. And it was not in the books. It was one of Prabhupada's lectures. I mean, if we would have heard that prior to all these changes, it might have been a different consideration whether we did it or not. But so everyone thought, oh, this is nice. This is a better way to chant. But actually, it was disbanded after a while because, you know, it wasn't the way Prabhupada wanted it. At the same time, it wasn't having any effect. Although initially it seemed very nice. So sometimes we adjust things in order for preaching or in order to facilitate, you know, the execution of one's devotional service. But if it's not given in the injunctions in the Vedas and it's not given by the spiritual master's instructions are as good as Vedic injunction also. not only Krishna's, but the spiritual master, because he represents the Vedas, or he represents Shastra. So in that way, it's easy to do the wrong thing, or it's easy to do something that looks like the right thing, but it's not like that. Like, just like when we chant Hare Krishna. We chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But sometimes we chant Ramo. Hare Ramo, especially in Kirtan. So there was one discussion by Srila Prabhupada with one very senior devotee who was a big Kirtan leader in our movement. And he was chanting Hare Ramo. And Prabhupada said, "What is this Ramo?" He said, "It's Rama." Rama. Not Rama, but Rama. Don't say Rama, then it's the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. You say Rama, it's goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. You say Rama, then it's Ram. Then it's the Supreme Personality. But you say Ramo, we don't know where it's going. Of course, I was leading a kirtan in Mayapur a couple years ago. It was the Mangal Arati kirtan. And so I just finished the kirtan and I went back, and this one lady, she ran up to me and very excited. She said, "Thank you for not chanting Ramo." I said, "Well, that's what you're supposed to do, right? Chant Rama." She said, "Everyone chants Ramo, and I can't take it anymore. It's Prabhupada's instruction. It's not for us to chant Ramo." And so, of course, now, Krishna's bhavagrahi janardana, which means he takes the substance of what you're doing and leaves the rest. In other words, he knows what you're chanting. But the spiritual masters and the scriptures also indicate we should do it correctly, like that. So though it's done wrong, Krishna knows what your intention is. But the spiritual master wants to offer the best to Krishna, and therefore he says, do it like this. So therefore, we can't just disregard the spiritual master's injunction. Say, "Krishna knows what I mean, so it doesn't matter what I do." No, it does. Because we want to please the spiritual master like that. So these things are important to understand like that. So that's one example. And there's many, many examples to understand exactly the rules and regulations and how to follow it, like that. Just like gambling, there's like four regulative principles: no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meeting, and no gambling. So what does Prabhupada say about gambling? One of the things he says about gambling is no frivolous sports. He calls that breaking the principles of gambling. So then, what is frivolous sports? One has to understand, what is frivolous sports? And that's as far as I can comment on that one, because he doesn't say what is frivolous sports. So there, these you can look it up. In one gambling, if you look up the word frivolous sports in the Veda base, you'll also see how it's connected with Prabhupada's statement about gambling like that. So, therefore, following the rules and it's easy to change things. In fact, Prabhupada really criticized us really heavily. And he would say it many times, "The problem with you Western devotees is you're always changing." And he quoted that one statement, I think it's a Bengali statement: "Walk on your hands, but whatever you do, change." That means do something different for the sake of doing something different. Because it's just the way Western society is. And of course, now we find that all over the world. People like change. Oh, this is new. This is different. Okay, but then again, how do we know what to change and what not to change? We also see the Acharyas change things. Srutikirti Prabhu, Prabhupada was making this point, and Srutikirti Prabhu said, we see Srila Prabhupada that in the Vedic injunctions generally we find that women don't perform activities within the temple. They do their worship at home, and they work under the guidance of either their parents or their husbands, like that. But Prabhupada, when you came to the West, you gave the women full rights as the men in all aspects of devotional service. And Prabhupada said, yes, I have become successful because of that. And so Srutikirti said, well, Prabhupada, that is a change of the injunction. Prabhupada said, yes, but one has to know what is the difference between a principle and something that is a detail. That's the two distinctions. What is a principle and what is a detail? Details can be changed, principles cannot. So then Srutikirti Prabhu went on to ask, well, how do we know what's the difference between a detail and a principle? And Prabhupada said, that requires intelligence. And that was the end of that. So that doesn't really give you the complete understanding, and except it does in one sense, is that no one can surreptitiously or arbitrarily add or change things unless it's authorized by the spiritual master, and it's not a principle but a detail. And therefore, understanding the difference between principle and detail is another idea of understanding whether you can change or not. To know what is a principle and what is, just like a principle is one must accept a spiritual master. A detail is who you accept. There's the difference, like that. If you say, well, I don't want to accept a spiritual master, you're breaking a principle, which is a major injunction, like that. So knowing what to accept and what to reject is a very subtle point, but is a very fundamental point in the execution of our devotional service. Therefore, one should study Prabhupada's books very carefully and hear regularly. Yeah. And you hear some of the most amazing things that Prabhupada talks about on his lectures and in his books that you don't generally hear in classes, because, you know, he's making these points within a certain context with certain devotees to bring out certain ideas like that, and it's in different discussions like that. Okay, we can talk more about that, and there's a lot of examples, but we'll leave some time for questions. Any questions?